Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy.
Live from Seahawks Training Camp.
On 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We are live out at Seahawks Training Camp all day long. And before we get to some of our takeaways from the day and leading you into the news you have to know ahead of camp, practice starts at 1:30, we are continuing with our most important Seahawks countdown. We started at 15, Carlos Dunlap, and we're all the way down to number 7, wide receiver Tyler Lockett.
Counting down to the most interesting Seahawk on the 2021 roster with Jake and Stacy.
All right, the list continues with number 6, wide receiver Tyler Lockett. I got to get into some of the wide receivers here. So Tyler Lockett comes in ahead of Chris Carson, obviously going to be one of the most important Seahawks of 2021 and also one of the veteran most Seahawks of 2021. I still remember when little Tyler Lockett was drafted back in 2015, Jake, and he was such a phenomenal addition to this team, making a huge impact immediately as a returner, a special teams guy, and then obviously as one of your receivers. His role has changed so much so that when you look back at where he started, you realize, wow, we were questioning when he was a rookie whether he would be a wide receiver number one or just one of your versatile receivers. And here he is, despite the stardom DK Metcalf has brought with him, as your remaining wide receiver number one in terms of targets. So knowing that the team drafted a wide receiver, knowing they've also got DK Metcalf, what makes Tyler Lockett, Jake, one of the most important Seahawks this year?
Well, how about I give you this? A 4-year, $69.2 million extension.
Nice.
As number one reason why Tyler Lockett is number 6 as most important Seahawks this year. Then you couple the fact with Tyler Lockett being the most consistent receiver that you have, being the guy that Russell Wilson goes to in critical situations, not just big plays down the field, but also on third down, also finding him in the red zone. I think Tyler Lockett is very underrated in this league because of the fact that he is undersized, because of the fact he's not flashy. He's even less flashy than Doug Baldwin, who we all talked about not getting respect for years. And Doug Baldwin was clearly the number one slot receiver in the NFL and one of the more dynamic weapons in the NFL at the time. Tyler Lockett has been putting up big-time numbers, big-time production. 2019, he has his first 1,000-yard season on 82 receptions, 8 touchdowns. Last year, he ups the ante and goes 100 receptions over 1,000 yards again and has 10 touchdowns. Now, the problem with Tyler Lockett's season last year, and there's a common theme here, is the second half of the season for the offense, it took a major dip. Tyler Lockett, in terms of touchdowns, in terms of yardage, all those things, also took a dip in the second half of the season. And if there was one question mark that I had about Tyler Lockett, is we've seen big explosive outputs from him. We've seen the outputs come in bunches, and we just haven't seen that consistency for Tyler Lockett over the 16 games. Now, I'm not saying that as a negative to the player. I'm saying that as an offense, they need to do a better job of keeping him involved all games long and every game, all 16 games into the playoffs. And I know sometimes it's predicated off of matchup, which I'm fine with, but you still got to find ways to get this guy the ball. He is so talented. His route running ability, his savviness, his hands are some of the best in the NFL. His reliable is outstanding. And Tyler Lockett is just an incredible pro in this league. It is awesome to be able to have him locked up for 4 more years. And Tyler Lockett is a big part of this offense being an explosive group.
Now, let's go back to just last year for Tyler Lockett. 300, even on the dot, 300 of his receiving yards came across 2 games. He had 100 receiving yards against Dallas in a win, and then 200 against Arizona in what was an overtime loss. Just a bummer for the team as a whole, because Tyler Lockett had a phenomenal game. And then you look at, like you said, his second half of the season. Here's what's weird about it. He still had games when he was a really reliable target. For instance, he was only used in 64% of all offensive snaps against the Jets in a win. He was 5 of 5, though, for 52 yards. Another time when he was used in less than 80% of snaps, that would have been a game, the second game against Arizona, he was 9 of 9 for 67 yards. So there were games when he wasn't used as much, but was still really reliable. And then games where his total yardage was just not really what you're used to seeing. 23 yards against Philadelphia, 34 yards against Washington. Now, the latter of those is one of the best defenses in the league, but are we thinking that there was a health concern? I know people were a little worried about whether it was an ankle or knee with Tyler Lockett. Mm-hmm. Was it that the offense as a whole suffered and Tyler Lockett fell off? Or is it that Tyler Lockett was struggling with health and so they were figuring out where else to go?
Tyler Lockett was struggling with health a little bit in the second half of the season, but I believe it more so had to do with the offensive woes as a whole rather than just the individual in Tyler Lockett. There was a whole lot more going on under the hood than just Tyler Lockett and his dip in production. We saw that in 2019. If you remember, he had another injury midway through the year, and the offense really struggled, really suffered because of the lack of presence of Tyler Lockett and the fact that he wasn't 100% healthy. This year, I think it was a little bit of a different story, and that's going to be the big thing for Tyler as we move forward, that he remains healthy all season long, that he is able to be a vital contributor to this team. And as I said before, this offense, Shane Waldron, new offensive coordinator, finding unique ways to keep him involved and keep him on, keep the defense honest. Because when this team is at its best, when this offense is at its best, it's with Tyler Lockett, it's with DK Metcalf, those two guys being a threat on any given down and a defense really feeling like they can't win. Pick your poison. All right, we're going to stop Tyler Lockett here on this play. DK Metcalf gets his. We're going to focus on DK Metcalf. Tyler Lockett eats up that single coverage. The one thing that I saw Tyler improve upon last year that was such an exciting development was his ability to work short area routes. And what I mean by that is choice routes, working man-to-man, working shallow crosses across the field. He did a much better job. And you could just see it in the progression, in the improvement, in the understanding of space and how to set guys up. He did really good with that at the line of scrimmage, and that is something that he hasn't necessarily excelled at in the past. So I love seeing that development and that growth, continual growth from Tyler Lockett. And I think with Shane Waldron pushing this conversation forward, Stacey, in 2021, I'm excited to see what Tyler Lockett looks like in this Shane Waldron offense. I think you're going to see him do a lot of the same things as you've seen in years past. But the one thing that Tyler Lockett said that he was excited about was the idea of being able to be more of a threat of yards after catch. And this offense has been more of, let's push the ball down the field. We are focused on air yards, meaning the yardage we gain is what we're throwing downfield. Right. It is not, hey, we're going to throw it short or we're going to throw screens. Exactly. And then you're going to allow our playmakers to go and get the extra extended yardage for us in that moment. And as you pointed from the very beginning, Tyler Lockett is dynamic with the ball in his hands. And now, that's something they haven't really utilized in the past.
I don't want to interrupt you too much with this one, but you're about to go into what I think will be a related answer to this question. So I'm going to cut in so that you get to espouse a little bit on this. So because the most important Seahawks list is also with specific players, there's a reason that each specific player is chosen where he is and that each specific player is on this list in the first place. If you're telling someone who's a Seahawks fan, hey, you're going to have 4,500 or 5,000 receiving yards for Russell Wilson, what makes a fan say, gosh, I hope Tyler Lockett has a huge year versus, oh, great, I'll take it from wherever? Why is it that Tyler Lockett specifically must be one of the receivers with a great year?
Why Tyler Lockett needs to be one of those guys is because he has that big play ability in him. It's not, you don't necessarily need it to be a receiver group by committee. That's only if you don't have guys that are clear standout talents. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett in particular, those two guys are big play guys that have the ability to change the game. They have the ability to make massive plays and consistent plays down the field. And one of the other things is that Tyler Lockett has been a security blanket for Russell Wilson for a number of years now. And I believe that if Tyler Lockett is performing at an extremely high level this year, it's only going to mean good things for DK Metcalf. It's only going to mean good things for Dwayne Eskridge and Gerald Everett because it takes the pressure off of everybody else around him. If you are worried about the big play threat of DK Metcalf, well, guess what? You've got Tyler Lockett that can beat you in man. He can beat you in zone. He can work now. He can work the underneath routes. And he runs those deep crosses better than anybody in the league right now. So I think Tyler Lockett just inherently with the skill set he has, the background he has of making big plays and the trust that he's created with Russell Wilson, it is vital for him to have a monster year because it'll make everybody else's job on offense so much easier.
And that's exactly what you want if you're, a rookie offensive coordinator, too. You want to get your guys in a pick-your-poison situation. I'd much rather have teams have to choose between Tyler Lockett or DK Metcalf or whatever Eskridge becomes or Everett, rather than just say, hey, they've got one guy, cover that guy, and maybe the other guys break out.
Yeah, and when it comes down to Tyler Lockett being the number six most important player for this team heading into this year, I expect a monster year from Tyler Lockett. I expect him to be used at every level of the field, short, intermediate, and deep. I'm excited to see how this all gets put together. And with Shane Waldron, he had Robert Woods, he had Cooper Kupp with the Rams, and they were able to utilize those guys in very unique ways. I'm excited to see what he can pull out of Shane Waldron, what he can pull out and accentuate with Tyler Lockett. And that is the goal and that is the hope when you bring in new eyes and a new offense to this thing, is how can you, all right, Tyler Lockett, you've done great things up to this point. How can we make you even better?
It's wide receiver Tyler Lockett coming in at number six on our 15 most important Seahawks list on Jake and Stacey. Make sure to tune in every single weekday at 1 p.m. to hear the newest Seahawk on this list. All right, that was our most important Seahawks countdown. Started at number 15 with Carlos Dunlap, and we're all the way at number 7 with Tyler Lockett. Still a lot of important Seahawks to make that list, you guys. And by the way, if you're hearing noise in the background, it is because we are live from training camp. Our training camp coverage is presented by Precor Home Fitness, and the guys are starting to take the field right now, so that fan applause you're hearing, that's what that's for. Already seeing a couple guys out here, but a couple D linemen out right now. The team will shortly follow. Bobby Wagner running over to greet a couple fans.
The legend,
B Wags, went over to say hi to a couple fans. Now he's running back over to the rest of the teammates.
You know what I don't understand?
Oh, Jake's Stacey. Here. I forgot to tell you guys. Jake's here.
I'm back.
Yeah, Jake's back.
Hey, unceremoniously. I'm sorry, everybody. Now I am
sorry,
back.
I was talking about myself for
a
while.
But, you know, I don't understand, and I'm going to have to ask Bobby about this, but it is 82 degrees outside, and he is wearing a black long sleeve. He is wearing sweatpants. What on earth?
And gloves.
How are you doing this? I really don't understand. That is another level of conditioning and then also self-punishment, right? Like, there's no way that's comfortable.
No, and Jordan Brooks came over to interview with Curtis and I in our second hour in sweatpants. Jamal Adams was in a hoodie
sleeves.
And sweatpants yesterday.
But Jamal Adams isn't out there practicing. Was Jordan practicing?
Jordan and Bobby were practicing.
In sweatpants.
Can't relate. Different level. Different kind of person.
I could do that inside. I could do that when it was wintertime or you start getting to the fall. But, man, 82-degree heat, man, that's different.
Jake, you are going to be watching training camp today with Curtis and myself. Again, practice starting at 1:30.
Wait.
You have stuff that you're going to talk to us about that you're going to be looking for, and then tomorrow we'll have your takeaways. We're going to do that at 30 after. As a reminder for you guys, get your questions in for What I Need to Know at 45 after, 710-710. Any question you have, Mariners, Seahawks, anything. But first, we're going to get to headlines.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrite.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Oh, yes, sorry. Headline number one. The Mariners dropped their series finale to the Houston Astros 11-4. Give the day off today.
On the plus side, at least they didn't give the Astros the best reliever on their team. Oh, no. That's my rewrite. Jake, I have been waiting to do these headline rewrites to give you a chance to sound off. We'll spend the most time on this one because you have plenty to say about that Mariners trade.
Yeah, I do. I think there's a lot to dive into, and I think that first and foremost, trading Kendall Graveman just on its face to the Houston Astros after this run with this team. Jerry Dipoto called it bad timing. He wished it could have been different timing. I wish it didn't happen at all. I mean, I understand the optics of or the idea of going out and getting Toro, who's 24 years old. There's 4.5 years of club control on this guy, and he's a middle infielder. There's a lot to be excited about, but that to me is more of a move of the future. I know he had 2 home runs in back-to-back games, but I don't anticipate his level of play just taking off as soon as he put on a Mariner uniform here to finish down the stretch. This is a move of the future. It's not a move for now. And they obviously got a 37-year-old reliever who came in yesterday and did just fine. But trading Kendall Graveman was so much more than just the player, so much more than just the move. It was a major leader in your clubhouse. It was a guy that when he was in that bullpen, and I know Paul Sewald is probably statistically your best reliever, mm-hmm. but Kendall Graveman is the thing that made that bullpen go. Kendall Graveman was the one that developed that mentality with the rest of the guys of attacking, of being aggressive, of honestly just bringing a different attitude than we've seen in quite some time. And I think that when you talk about the year 2021 and this team's chances to finish down the road, it's a gut punch. And I think that that is a tough one, a tough pill to swallow for Mariners fans. And all I've got to say is, man, Jerry Dipoto better come through in the next 24 hours because we're going to be anxiously awaiting to see what those moves will end up being that actually make this club, this clubhouse, feel like this organization actually has their backs like he said they would.
Let's stick on this headline for just a second because, Curtis, I want you to sound off on it too. Yesterday, one of our headlines was Jerry Dipoto lost the clubhouse. That was our immediate reaction. We all read that piece by Ryan Divish in the Seattle Times. So my question for both of you, and I'll answer it too, is there a way to get it back? And does it matter that he lost the clubhouse? He's the GM.
The quickest way to get it back is to make a huge splash in the trade market. And while there was just another name that is off the trade market, that'd be Max Scherzer. He's getting traded to the San Diego Padres, so he was never rumored to the Mariners, but that's a huge move that I'm sure Padres fans and that clubhouse alike are stoked about. If you want to regain the trust of your clubhouse, go out and make a difference-making move that is going to put this team in a position to make the playoffs for the first time in two decades.
Jake, does it matter that he lost the clubhouse?
I think there's an aspect of it that it doesn't from a GM standpoint that, hey, we need to make moves of the future. If I'm thinking about the future, that part doesn't matter. But if I'm thinking about right now and the momentum that has been built and think about the young core that is playing their tails off and some of these leaders that have been playing their tails off and have been leading the charge, this is a gut punch and this is something that you do need to continue to build goodwill towards. I think it all matters. I think it is a collection. So my ultimate answer is if I'm just going to be cold-hearted and just focus on the future and the rebuild, no. But if you're talking about the proper way to build a winning culture, yes, it does matter. And Jerry Dipoto knows that. And that's why he promised the moment he made this trade. He would not have promised if he didn't think that that was important. The feeling of the clubhouse, that he promised that this group is going to make future moves that everyone will feel better about come tomorrow. And we'll see if that actually happens.
All right. What's next, EJ?
Headline rewrites.
Aaron Rodgers made his first comments to the Green Bay media on Wednesday after arriving to Packers camp this week. What's the real headline?
Headline rewrite, and it's inspired by Jeopardy, just for you, Curtis. I'll take uncomfortable questions for $1,000, Alex. That would explain a lot of what the press conference was, and honestly, a lot of Aaron Rodgers' responses. He was very candid about his relationship with the front office. I mean, he didn't come out and say, like, it's not great, it's bad, I hate everyone, Brian Gutekunst is the worst. Nothing like that was said, but he was frank about feeling like he could have been used as a recruitment weapon for the team and wasn't able to do that. About feeling like he was in limbo and a bit of a lame duck situation. About feeling like it wasn't about the money, it was about, you know, wanting to be there or figuring out a way to be valued. And I don't know, Jake, what'd you take away from Aaron Rodgers' conversation?
What did I take away from it? I mean, actually, this is the one part that I got in that car and I came into this exact conversation that you guys were having. And Stacey, I was kind of surprised by what you said. You said that you were actually, you liked what he had to say. You were okay. You were comfortable with it.
I think he was leaning into the role as half villain and half kind of like really honest dude.
Yeah. Well, good. You got Tim Grover coming over here. Amy, how you doing? These guys, Russell Wilson's trainers.
No, people always walk by and say hi to me, too. I just want you to know.
Bob
Condotta. People wouldn't stop saying hi to me. I'm also popular waving to people. Hey, guys.
But what I was saying was that you went out and said that you were actually okay with it, that you liked what he had to say, and you liked the openness and honesty from Aaron Rodgers. And I just kept thinking to myself, but at the same time, I think we think that, but we just experienced that in this town earlier this offseason with Russell Wilson, and that reaction was not as welcomed as it was with Aaron Rodgers from what I saw, you know, across Twitterverse and everything else. Why do you think that is?
I think that Aaron Rodgers' persona is different. Like, I think people have... It started a little bit. Not totally, but a little bit. Remember that article that came out? I think... Was it ESPN, Seth Wickersham, or was it Sports Illustrated? An article about Aaron Rodgers and just kind of his relationship with people and how tough he was. And,
yeah.
And that it was a little soured with a lot of people. That I think that kind of shaped people's opinions of him. And there was this underlying thing of, like, you know, he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah. Right, so now...
It doesn't surprise people.
I guess that's part of it. And then for Russell Wilson, it did surprise people for him, you know, and the way that he's constantly gone about his business, for him to have a different tune in the way that he expressed himself, I think was a little jarring for people. So I think that this is something that is surprising for me, to see that Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers might be coming to this resolution of not just him finishing out this year, but maybe for the future. I'm still calling that he is going to be gone by the end of this year. Mm-hmm. That when he posted that Last Dance picture with Devontae Adams, that's what they truly meant. And I think that's Aaron Rodgers, how he feels. But it is interesting that he cracked the door open for the possibility that, hey, he could be here longer than just after this year.
All right, that'll do it for headlines. The rest of the team officially taking the field for Seahawks training camp day two. I'm seeing the linebackers. I'm seeing Ben Burkervin, Cody Barton, Jordan Brooks, Bobby Wagner. Seeing a couple defensive backs Russell Wilson came out, gave a wave to fans running by the crowd. We're seeing the D lineman over here, Daryl Taylor, with his helmet on. You're seeing Kerry Hyder Jr., new free agent acquisition. A lot of guys out here getting ready for another day at camp. Speaking of, Jake Heaps is back, and he will be watching training camp today. Tomorrow, we're going to have Jake and my takeaways from camp today. And beforehand, before any of it starts, we have practice starting in the next 10 minutes. We're going to tell you guys what we are looking for. That's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
live from the sidelines at Seahawks training camp.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Now here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
You are listening to Jake and Stacy live from Seahawks training camp, brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. The players are going through warm-ups right now, and practice has officially begun. Jake, back from paternity leave, first of all.
Yes.
Are you feeling relaxed or flustered?
That's
a lot of work. A lot of work in a week.
It is, but I'm not going to pretend like
shout
it's
out
a lot
to Brooke.
Of work for
shout out to Brooke for real, though.
Yes.
Let's hear
a lot of work for Brooke, and I'm just there to help out as much as humanly possible. So it's been fun. It's been so much fun.
The pictures are very cute.
River is an absolute angel. She's a gift. And the best part has been watching the boys just totally dote over her. Like, they're obsessed. So it's really fun to watch that part. Luckily, that's all gone very well. And she slept pretty good through the night for the most part.
Nice.
So that's been a positive thing. But no, I'm excited to be back. It's get antsy, you know, like on Tuesday. I mean, gosh, there are all these huge things, the series win versus the A's,
mm-hmm.
That amazing night, that amazing moment with the comeback win over the Astros. You know, there's things that you miss out on that you want to be a part of. And obviously the start of training camp, it's... For me, this is one of my favorite times of the year. There's so much hope. There's so much excitement. And there's all these athletes out here who have worked their tails off to get to this point. You know, being in their shoes at one point in time, I mean, this was it. This was awesome. And I couldn't wait to be out here at the VMAC practicing in front of the 12s and how awesome they are, the environment that they bring, the intensity in Pete Carroll's practices, and just overall just the fun and the opportunity to show what you can do and try and make a roster.
Now, speaking of trying to make the roster, it doesn't have to be guys on the bubble, but what are some of the position battles you'll be watching for, obviously throughout training camp, but how about just today when we finish this show at the top of the hour and you, me, and Curtis and Taylor head over to the sideline and start watching these guys do their 11-on-11s or independent drills?
Yeah.
I mean, who are some guys you're looking at? What are some position battles you're looking at?
Well, the position battles that I'm going to be looking for right off the top, it's going to be corner. It's going to be strong side linebacker with Alden Smith and Daryl Taylor. I mean, you look at Alden Smith at number 99 there. I mean, he is just a freak of nature, just how big he is, how long he is. And it just goes to show that he has always had the God-given talent and ability. But it's about whether or not he can physically get himself ready, mentally he can get himself ready to have a season like he did last year with the Dallas Cowboys. That would be a very welcomed addition for the Seattle Seahawks. But you got Daryl Taylor. Taylor. Excited to get my eyes on him. Really excited to look at, as well, Gabe Jackson, the new addition for the offensive line here for the Seahawks. But then you talk about that cornerback position. I mean, that's a huge, huge battle. I mean,
Pete Carroll himself called it wide open yesterday.
I mean, yeah, when you think about that, you do not have an established starter. Not a single established starter, and not one corner outside of, honestly, you've got Trey Flowers and Pierre Desir, who have really established themselves in this league at one point in time. Not saying now, but at one point in time, Pierre Desir was a starting cornerback for the Indianapolis Colts and was the guy. You look at...
Flowers had 15 games, I think.
Exactly. You know, and was a guy that the Seahawks really put a lot of trust and faith and gave everything that they had to over the years. Outside of that, you talk about DJ Reed, Akilah Witherspoon. There are so many questions about them, and can they sustain and be a guy that can be really, really reliable over the course of a now 17-game season and through the playoffs? We don't know the answers to that. And all these guys are going to be fighting and trying to earn their spot right here, right now.
Now, one of the most important conversations we had this offseason was certainly about Russell Wilson, the comments he made. So let's talk about the subject of those comments, the offensive line. The team made an effort at improving it, bringing in veteran guard Gabe Jackson in a trade with the Raiders, giving up one of just four draft picks they had, and then signing him. So they invested rare draft capital and money into someone bringing him in. Now, he'll be at right guard, which means that second-year players Damian Lewis is going to be moving over to left guard next to Dwayne Brown. Brown didn't participate in practice yesterday. I'm looking for him today. We'll see if he's out there. Don't see him right now, but there's a big group of guys in front of me, guys I don't see.
Also notable, Ethan Posick is not.
Ethan Posick is not. He is not in helmet. So we'll see what that offensive line looks like. But when it comes to just the offensive line, Jake, what are you looking for? Is it how Damian Lewis looks? There's only so much you can see in camp,
right.
But what are some things we can learn early?
Well, I think some of the things that we can learn early is the chemistry between everybody and how they're feeling about one another and where they think this group can go. I think the other thing that we can figure out pretty quickly is how they're going to adjust and adapt to this new running scheme that Andy Dickerson and Shane Waldron will be implementing. This heavy zone running scheme, and I'll be curious because when you talk about the offensive line as a whole, these are big-bodied guys. These are not necessarily guys that I would necessarily determine as heavy zone scheme type of offensive line bodies, but Gabe Jackson, Damian Lewis, Dwayne Brown, they are very athletic offensive linemen. Ethan Posick is an athletic center. Normally, when you have those big bodies, particularly I'm looking at Damian Lewis and Gabe Jackson,
yep, yep.
You want a downhill running attack. But right now, they're going to be more of a zone scheme as they're looking for, to implement Shane Waldron's offense. How will that come together? That's going to be a big question that I'll have, and I'm excited to see how it goes.
Let's talk a little bit about Dwayne Eskridge. He was placed on the PUP list. As a reminder for you guys, the preseason PUP list, which is right now, versus the regular season PUP list are different. Just because he's on it doesn't mean he has to wait 6 weeks. They can take him off of it. It's only if you're placed on it to start the season. So just keep that in mind. There is no, set time he's going to have to be on there. They can activate him anytime if they want. Pete Carroll kind of hinting that they're hoping he can be back in as soon as next week. He said 1 to 2 weeks is kind of the hope, and they're just kind of playing it safe, but he's eager to get out there. I mean, I was looking, and you saw him too, Dwayne Eskridge, standing in a bucket hat. Obviously, he's not going to practice today, but he's out here with the guys in uniform with a bucket hat on, and I liked seeing him high-five guys after the drills. I mean, it's not often that you get rookies out here that are getting guys fired up and getting involved. You can see him now walking down, high-fiving Rashad Penny, and he's going out here. I sound like a stalker. I'm like watching Dwayne Eskridge. I'm so excited to see him in this offense, Jake. I mean, are you nervous about the PUP list addition? Are you excited to see him out here? Where are you at right now?
Well, of course I'm nervous. I mean, I was talking about this after minicamp, right?
I mean,
and people are like, oh, Jake, well, it's too soon. We don't know what's going to happen. Well, I mean, anytime that you're dealing with hamstrings, you're dealing with foot, you're dealing with those types of injuries for a skill position player that their job is about explosion, and Dwayne Eskridge is every bit of that. This is going to be something that is going to be a nagging injury, and I hope that over the course of the next week that he is healthy and ready to go, because these are valuable reps that he is missing out on. This is not an established player. This is a rookie. There is a transition in this league. Even as great as DK Metcalf was his rookie year, there was a transition. All these reps mattered. They are so valuable, and for Eskridge to not be here or not to be practicing, I should say, is a bummer, and I hope that he can get back out on the field as soon as possible because he has the ability to be a true impact difference maker for this offense, and that's what they selected him for. That's what this offense is designed for him to be. And quite frankly, Stacey, what it does, though, is it gives these other receivers opportunities, and we're going to see what Penny Hart and Freddie Swain and the rest of this crew can do on the back end and see if any of these guys can step up and make a name for themselves in the absence of Dwayne Eskridge. And that's the name of the game here as you talk about training camp and trying to make the 53-man roster.
Can't wait to hear your takeaways for tomorrow. And we know that we've got to get out here in just a couple minutes, which is why we're heading into our final segment here. It's What I Need to Know. You guys already know it. Get your questions in. Any question you have, Jake and I live at VMAC, ready to take them. 710-710. That's the Mac and Jack's text line. What I Need to Know coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy
live from the sidelines at Seahawks training camp,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Now here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
It is What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Get your questions into the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. Going to start with, actually, you know what I'm going to start with is someone texting in. They wanted to know where you got the name River from. And then what I also appreciated someone saying, was it on purpose because you're wife Brooke and River's mom Brooke has also a water-based name.
Yes, that is very true, and trust me, many of people have pointed that out.
I didn't notice it until now, but it's adorable.
the very simple answer is, you know, when you talk with your significant other for the first time, or you just have a boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, and you're talking about kids, you want them, or you get into like names and stuff. The moment I met Brooke, you know, when that conversation came up, she always just envisioned having a girl named River. So that was kind of cemented. That was going to happen. And there wasn't really a significant meaning other than she really liked the name. It's one of those things that I think fits her perfectly now that I see her and that we're here. And
aww,
we're so happy to have River a part of our lives. She's part of the Heaps team now.
Well, that congratulations,
is,
you guys.
That is one of those things, and I've learned this in the 12 weeks of fatherhood I've experienced. Is that you give a kid a name and you're like, did we name them the right name and whatnot? And then,
right,
like, as soon as they are born, it is perfect for them.
Yes.
The name that.
It's true.
It's crazy how that works.
It is. And it's the same thing. Like, when we had Jackson and we had Bodie, we were like, oh my gosh, you know, we're so sad that, you know, Jackson's not going to get all of our attention and all this stuff. And then as soon as Bodie was born, all that went away. You know, it's just like they'd always been here, and you can't imagine life without them. So, I mean, it's so funny how all that stuff kind of happens, and it's a whirlwind. You know, it's been a whirlwind of a week, you know, while we've tried to transition to having three now, which, gosh, I can't even I'm saying that I have three kids. But it's been so much fun, so much fun.
My mom said if I was a boy, I was going to be named Wesley.
Mm. I could see that, you know. Think that would fit perfectly.
Okay,
now that at you,
I look like a Wesley.
I see Wesley would
thank
be the
you
perfect transition.
West
Ross. All right, What I Need to Know. This is a Mariners one from the 360. What I Need to Know.
Boy,
the Mariners said we're looking for a right-handed bat and a second baseman. Instead, they target Toro, who plays third, not second so far, and hasn't shown that he can hit in the bigs. What's the improvement or upside in this trade? Thanks.
Well, the upside, honestly, it's very clear that, look, yeah, he's been a player that hasn't performed up to this stage in terms of being a star player in this league, but he's a good infielder. He is a good middle infielder, and also when you just look at his upside, you look at the past trades that they have made, J.P. Crawford, Mitch Haniger, you could even put Marco Gonzalez in
Ty
that
France
name, Ty,
yeah,
France, right? These are types of players that the team foresaw as guys that, man, they might not be contributing at a high level for their organization right now, or they might not be in the role that is best suited for them right now, but we feel like we can find that role for them within our organization. So in terms of a long-term plan, I absolutely see where they're coming from on this trade. Now it's a matter of Toro proving them right in the second half of the season here and next year, because here's the other aspect about it. Even though he's 24 years old, he does not have the same excuse as Jared Kelnick right now. He has significant at-bats at the major league level. And there's obviously room to improve as he's a young player, but he does not have the same leash, I would say, as somebody like Jared Kelnick or Julio Rodriguez, as some of these younger guys that are coming up, Cal Raleigh, that need those significant at-bats, those around that 300 mark, to really feel like you have an established mark of who these guys are.
What I need to know, this person wants to know why Damian Lewis is going to be moved to left guard. So this is what they said. Why move Damian Lewis to left guard when he grades out better at right guard over Gabe Jackson? And Gabe Jackson has a better grade at left guard. I'm assuming they're talking about maybe Pro Football Focus grades,
they
which
are.
Like... So why is, do you think, is it the right move to put Gabe Jackson at right guard and Damian at left? Or do you think that either makes sense? Do you think they're still figuring it out, or do you think they're set?
No, I do believe they're set. I do believe that this is something that they truly believe is going to be the right decision for them, and we'll see how it ends up working out. I mean, unless Damian Lewis just absolutely struggles at left guard, just struggles mightily, I don't see them changing this and flip-flopping these two guys. Jamal Adams just walked right out in front of us here. It's in his hoodie set up here. But his sleeveless hoodie set up. I think that when you talk about these two guys, it's a fine question to bring up. But I also believe that when you talk about the longevity of Damian Lewis, I think that him being that left guard of the future really excites me, and I think that he can do a great job in that role. And I like kind of having veteran guys next to each other to help out some of the, I don't want to say weak links, but you know, guys that are still trying to find their way in the league, mm-hmm. like Dwayne Brown being coupled with Damian Lewis, Gabe Jackson being coupled with Brandon Schell. I think that having those two leaders on each side of the ball is going to help this group balance out.
From the 253, Jake and Wesley, what I need to know is where do you
doesn't
see...
Doesn't have the same kind of ring to it.
Where do you see the Kraken season looking like? Playoffs or low expectation? Curtis, you should sound off on this one too, because you've been following some of these offseason moves really closely.
Yeah, I love the signing they made yesterday of Philip Grubauer, mm-hmm. a potential all-star goalie.
Yeah, you're hot on him.
I am. Yeah, he was a Vezina Trophy finalist, which is the award they give to the best goalie in the NHL. And plus the moves that they made, not signing Carey Price and signing Grubauer instead, and then flipping their backup goalie, Vitek Vanacek, for a second-round pick in 2023. Great day yesterday for the Kraken. And as we all know, we've heard from Greg Wyshynski, we've heard from John Buchogross, we've heard from a bunch of guys. The key to a successful expansion team in the NHL is figuring out your goalie situation. They've done so, mm-hmm. and the Pacific Division is wide open, so
right.
there is a possibility.
And Vegas making the recent trade, too, is
exactly.
wild.
You know, and moves like that where it's very savvy and they set themselves up for a better situation long term and with their cap and all that, these are the types of moves that develop trust, right? It's not that, you know, this is an expansion team. You don't know exactly how everything's going to shake out, what this organization is going to be, how they're going to do. Are they trustworthy in the decisions that they will make? But this is a move that you look at and go, okay, this is a savvy move. This is something that they foresaw happening or could happen, and they were able to capitalize. So mm-hmm. when you talk about this team, and everybody was worried after the expansion draft, oh man, in terms of scoring, this team isn't going to be in a good place. You just got to give it time. You got to
yep.
give it an opportunity.
And they've got young athletic defensemen
exactly.
that will at least help. I don't see them having the same success as Vegas, but they entered a different draft atmosphere. I think a lot of people, Vegas reset the expectation for the type of season the Kraken should have, but Vegas also completely broke the mold from any expansion team prior to this, and like almost any league. So I think that we all have fair expectations, though perhaps not as high as Vegas, who managed to just kind of
blew everything out of the water,
and also with the way that they approach the expansion draft, you know, like, hey, we won't take this guy if you give us this, or we'll take this guy and, you know, this contract if you do this. So I think the Kraken entered a different landscape there. Final question here, because we are a sports show and this is an important question. We focus on the facts. We focus on the sports.
Of course.
From the 509, who wins between a taco and a grilled cheese sandwich? What's better? And any rule can apply.
What's better?
What's better?
Wow.
I mean, it's taco. It's not close. No, it's taco.
The convenience of grilled cheese, though.
There is no hesitation involved.
Yeah. The
convenience of a grilled cheese. It gets butter everywhere.
Yeah,
it's greasy.
What are you talking about?
You
can go to it in an instant. But I will say that tacos are the clear winner here.
Yeah, it's not even close.
They're very versatile. They're also very easy to make.
True, but you got to grill up the ground beef, get the taco seasoning out,
ground
you got to buy
beef.
Tortillas.
I mean, you can have all kinds of different meats in
sure,
taco.
But, like, you could easily make a grilled cheese sandwich with, like, three ingredients.
I'll say this.
I love how you're
sure.
basing
bread,
this off of
butter,
sure.
cheese.
Yeah, you're doing it off of simplicity.
Butter and cheese.
Would you eat a grilled cheese sandwich right now in almost 90 degree weather, Curtis?
Yes.
Oh, gross. Okay, I guess I would too.
Yeah.
I'm hungry. All right, that'll do it for us today. We are going to go out and watch these guys practice. Practice already kicking off, and we will have takeaways for you tomorrow. It'll be really exciting. But you are going to hear more from training camp next on Wyman and Bob. Do not go anywhere. This is 710 ESPN Seattle.